13th principle of the Nimamins, which is the last of the 13, which deals with the resurrection of the dead, which the Animamin, which we recite, reads, Animamin be'emunah shlema, I believe with total faith, she'tiyeh tchiyas hamesim, that there will be a resurrection, be'eis she'yale rotzon, when the desire of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come forth, me'eis ha'beri yisborach shmo, from God blessed be He, be'yisalo Zichro la'adol netzach netzachim, and remembrance forever. So basically, that we believe that the dead will be brought back to life when Hashem wills it to happen. And in the Yigdal, we say Meisim Yechaye Keil Bereiv Chazdei Baruch Hashem Shmei Tehilo Aso. That means that God will bring the dead back to life with His great love. May His glorious name, Yisala Zichro, may His glorious name be blessed, L'netzach Netzochim, forever and ever for all time. So the Rambam on his commentary on the Mishnah writes in a capsule form, he writes briefly that the resurrection of the dead is one of the foundations handed down by Moshe. One who does not believe in it cannot be associated with Judaism or its religion. Now, this is a very strong statement that the Rambam makes, brief and strong, and you'll see shortly why the Rambam emphasizes this, and he was attacked very strongly concerning this point. And that's basically, he had to write a special booklet, that he does believe in Tchiyas HaMesim. But here in Chelek, in his commentary on the Mishnah, he says that one who does not believe in it cannot be associated with Judaism or its religion. Now, the resurrection, he contends, another paragraph, is just for the righteous. The Medrash says in Bereishis Rabba that rain is for both the wicked and the righteous, but the resurrection will be only for the righteous. It would be absurd, he continues, for the wicked to be brought back to life, for even while they are alive, they are considered spiritually as if they are no longer living, because our Chazal teaches that mesim, that rishayim, b'chayehem kriyim mesim, that the wicked are basically, for all purposes, spiritually considered non-existent during their lifetime. The righteous are considered alive even after they die. So there really is no purpose to bring back those who were dead even when they were treading on this earth. This is what the Rambam says in his commentary. And in the code he says there, these have no portion in the world to come, just as he listed the other 12 principles. So he says those who deny the resurrection of the dead. Now, the Rambam, as I said, wrote a special mimer, which was called the Mamar of Tchiyas HaMesim, of Resurrection. And here we just have a few excerpts we're going to refer to it. This is a major point this evening. Just to give you an overview of what he says, this concept is well known among all Jews. There are none who dispute it. And the Rambam is taking the offensive, as we'll see later, because he was attacked. It is mentioned many times in our prayers and homilies, as well as in supplications, and innumerable references may be found in the Talmud and the Medrash. And what is the aspect? What does it mean? He says the body and soul will be reunited once again after they have been separated by death. There is no Jew who disputes this, and it cannot be interpreted other than literally. One may not accept the view of any Jew who believes otherwise. For we must understand that even though many other biblical verses may be interpreted allegorically, but this must be taken literally. The concept of resurrection is basically found in the book of Daniel. In such a manner, the Rambam says that it cannot be interpreted other than literally. We are told in Daniel that the Rabbim, many who sleep in the dust, Mishene Ofar, shall awaken and come to everlasting life, and some will come to everlasting shame and reproach. Now Daniel was told by the angel in the final words of this, now go to your way to the end, to the Ketz Hayomim, and rest, but you shall arise to your destiny at the end of days. So from these teachings it is clear that there is such a thing as resurrection. Rambam continues, we have also seen many pertinent teachings that the men whose souls have been returned to their bodies will eat, drink, marry, have children, and finally die after living a long time. Now here the Rambam shocks everyone by coming through with the idea that they will be resurrected, and he says, and they will live a normal life, but they will finally die after living a very long time. And then what will happen with them? Will they be extinct? Is that all that resurrection means? Is that all of Elam Haba? But the Rambam, as I said, we took here three little brief paragraphs of a lengthy ma'amar on Trias HaMesim, a whole volume, and this is the essence of what he's saying, and we're going to speak about this. Now, he does say that the body and the soul will be reunited. We know that there is an affinity, there's a closeness between the body and the soul, even after the soul leaves the body. Now, what actually is the soul? That there is a lot of discussion on that itself. Basically, what is the person? Who is the person? We can appreciate it's not the brain of the individual. For example, what happens if they come up with the idea of a brain transplant? Not only a heart transplant, and they're going to have a brain transplant. We once discussed this. But this brain transplant will be, you know, like a computer, it will be erased. You have to reset it. And then you go ahead and you take and you transfer the interchange. You'll transfer someone's background, someone's history, someone's experiences onto this brain. Now, who is this person? Is he the first person or is he the second person? And actually, everything is mechanics except the experiences that he had lived through. So in essence, these experiences is really what the person is. The person's experiences, the activities of his life, that's really his neshama. And that's what ascends briefly to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. If he finds his makom menucha, his place of peace. But just the relationship between this neshama, this soul, to the person, to the soul comes up before Hashem, and the soul is, I mean, the experiences, the life, and it stands naked. So actually, some of the Sivorim say that the idea of the Einish, the punishment, is just standing naked before God. And all of your deeds, everything that you did, which was supposedly hidden and covered over and you're ashamed of, is just going to be straight out there. And that's, in essence, the worst shame that a person could have. But this is that neshama. How does that neshama relate to the guf? So briefly, there's another dimension here of immortality. That the dead know, and we always say, Rabbi Kaplan, his anthology, speaks about it briefly, compiles a few Kabbalistic concepts. In the Talmud, we say that the neshamas know what's happening here. The simcha, we say they're there, and so on. So these philosophers say that, of course, that the soul achieves a degree of unity with Hashem, and Hashem is the source of all knowledge. And therefore, this soul also partakes of omniscience. When a man dies, he enters a new world of awareness. And it's interesting the way he describes it. He exists as a disembodied soul and is aware of what is happening in the physical world. He learns to focus on any physical event he wishes. At first, he says, this is a frightening experience. And this is what you read in the books when they speak about a after-death experience. At first, he says, it's a very frightening experience. You know that you're dead, the way he depicts it here, and you could see your body lying there with your friends and relatives standing around crying. And we are taught that immediately after death, the soul is in a great state of confusion. And this is alluded to in the book of Eiv, where it says his soul mourns for him. We know that the Drashim say the first 3 days, that's why the first 3 days of Avelis is a stronger period, because his soul is like mourning also for the separation from the body. But then, this is especially true before the body is buried. That's the idea of burying the body. The soul wonders what will happen to the body. It finds it to be both fascinating and frightening to watch its own body's funeral arrangements in preparation for burial. That's why we find in the Gemara, it says, when you give the hesped, the hosam koimno, I will be standing there. The soul will hear. And this is one of the reasons why we treat this, the body with utmost respect. Now, and the same with autopsies, but this disembodied soul spends much of its time learning how to focus. Because it's now, it doesn't have physical eyes, and we don't even have the vocabulary to describe it. And this is what's called the kafakela. It's like being thrown from a sling from one end of the world to the other. That's why really Gehenna itself is a form of rest. This is worse than Gehenna. The kafakela means that the soul is literally can't find its way. We go into Kabbalah, that has to do with a dibuk. It clings to something, and as it's being shundled back and forth, because it can't come to any menucha. Eventually, normally the soul then goes and finds its place. But this is being thrown back and forth like in a sling. One of the few things that the soul has little difficulty focusing on is its own body. And its familiar pattern with some tie seems to remain. It is a refuge for it from its disorientation. So he already alludes to the fact that there is a certain tie between body and soul. Because Albo, one of the great philosophers, when he speaks about resurrection, so he goes into great detail. Why resurrection? Why not a new creation? I mean, is it a difference to Hashem if he goes ahead and he recreates a new being? Does he have to go ahead and bring back the original body? So he says that to understand why resurrection and not a new creation, we must bear in mind, it goes with a different idea, that a thing which has once received a higher influence or power, has lost it, is more prepared to receive it a second time than it was in the beginning. And I will allude to this later, but the way we're saying, there is a certain affinity even when the body is separated from the soul. There is a connection. The body, the soul is used to that body. So there is the idea, we'd say, of resurrection rather than a new creation itself. So now, the Rambam seems to say, to startle all of us, by saying he grants the fact that we will be resurrected and have a nice life, a lengthy life, but at the end, he says, the ones who warrant resurrection, but at the end, the person will die eventually. So is that the end, or what does he mean? Now, what caused a lot of confusion in the Rambam, aside from what he writes in Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuvah, the Rambam speaks about Olam Haba. Right, we mentioned now Tchias HaMeisim. The Rambam spoke a little bit about it. But he puts a great emphasis on the idea of Olam Haba. What is Olam Haba? Now, the term Olam Haba could mean, like we say, a person dies, his neshama goes to Olam Haba. Yet we find the idea of Olam Haba meaning way far into the future. How many Olam Habas are there? What is Olam Haba? We're a little confused in that. So the Rambam writes that the great hidden benefit for the righteous is Chaya Olam Haba, life of Olam Haba, and that's the life when there is no death afterward, and the greatness and the goodness which has no evil with it. And that when the Torah says, if you do this mitzvah, Laman Yitav Loch Ve'arachta Yomim, everything will be good to you, your years will be prolonged. So we say, Yitav Loch means a world that is entirely good. Arachta Yomim means a world that is eternal. So there is such an Olam Haba. What is the Olam Haba? The schar of the tzaddikim is that they will merit this sweetness and pleasantness, and they will live in this greatness. The Rishayim are paid back that they won't merit Olam Haba, but somehow their souls will disappear, chorus, they will disappear. And anybody who is not zoiche to this life, right, he is really dead, because his neshama is destroyed and lost like a neshama of an animal, meaning there is no spiritual life to the neshama of an animal. An animal has what we call a nefesh bahamis, an animal soul. When it dies, it's dead. There is no elam habo for animals. A person who loses his spiritual soul, so it's nichras, and that's it. His life had the same meaning, essentially, as kibehema. And this is what he says when the Torah writes that there is chorus, that's what it means. HaKores be'elam hazeh, kikores le'elam habo. The soul will be cut up and destroyed. All right? If not, the soul that departed and was taken away in this world will not merit anything in the world to come. Then he continues. The next world, he says, there is no body. Elam habo ein be'gufu gviya. There is no form or body, but the souls of the tzaddikim are like angels. They have no body. And since there is no body, so there is no eating and no drinking, and nothing that occupies man here, and nothing can happen to him physically that happens to a physical, to a body, like sitting and standing, sleeping, laughing. Chachamim said that. He said, Elam HaBo has none of these physical acts, but tzaddikim are sitting with their spiritual halos, and they become infused with the shine, with the splendor of the divine. So he says, you see clearly that the tzaddikim are sitting, not sitting because it's only a soul, and they imbue the splendor of the divine. There's no eating and there's no drinking. And he says, and this is the whole idea of Nani Miziv Ashchina, what is the rejoicing and the pleasure of the Ziv, the shine, the glory of God, that they know and they understand from the truths, that the eternal truths of Hashem, which they have no way of comprehending when they're in a body on this world, but when the soul is free, it can comprehend these great truths. Now he continues, then he goes into great detail what is considered a soul, a nefesh, and so on. Now, the Ravid, right away, the Rambam adversary and many things, the Rambam on this point, and he says, what does he mean that there is no body in Elam HaBo? Divrei Ha'ish HaZeh, and you know, he was very critical of Maimonides, of the Rambam, he was his adversary. He says, the words of this man, and this is mild yet, Be'einai in my eyes, Kravim is very close with Misha Emet to a person who says, there is no resurrection of the bodies, but only souls. B'chai Reishi, he says, and I swear that this is not the meaning of our rabbis, and he brings many Talmudic quotations where it says that the body will be resurrected in a physical sense. Well, we brought down from the Rambam's paper on the resurrection that the Rambam also said that the bodies will be resurrected in a physical sense. So what is the Rambam speaking about here in Elam HaBo? So it's interesting, the great commentary on the Rambam, the Kesef Mishneh, who's on the side of the text of the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam, he says that really there is no difference between the Ravid and the Rambam. It's just a mistake in terminology. When the Rambam says that he's speaking about Elam HaBo, not because it's not present now. That world is present now. And that world, that world is now, but that's the world of the neshamas where they go right after they leave the body. After we live here, that's when your soul departs your body and you have this kind of pleasure in Gan Eden. That's why it's called Elam HaBo. But the Rambam, by Elam HaBo here, the Kesef Mishneh contends, is not speaking about the world after the resurrection. After the resurrection, he agrees with the Ravid that in the Talmudic passages that it's like a physical form and so forth. This is what the Kesef Mishneh contends. But we've seen the other writing of the Rambam in Trias HaMeisim, right? He says clearly that, as we'll see, that the Elam HaBo here doesn't mean the Elam of the Neshamis right after he dies. But this Elam HaBo here means the ultimate Elam HaBo, meaning when mankind, after Mashiach, after Tchias HaMesim, will come to Elam HaBo. So how does the Rambam learn this? Rambam, according to his own writings and his treatise, he doesn't mention anything about the world after we die here. That's not his topic of discussion. He's speaking here about ultimately the Elam HaBo. And it's like some others contend, the Rambam can't mean the world that when you leave right here, because he has to tell us news that there are no bodies and nobody eats up there. Every child knows that. So he says, obviously, the Rambam, when he speaks about Elam HaBo, means the ultimate Elam HaBo. And yet he says there's no form and there's no food, and you can't say that's what the Ravid means. There are different opinions. And yet the Rambam himself said, that we quoted before, that there will be a resurrection, but then the person will die after the resurrection. He'll live a long life and he'll die again. So when does this Elam HaBo come about and how does it take place? So in this question, there are five points or five views amongst the philosophers as to the procedure, how it will take place, and what Elam HaBo actually is. And let me just quote briefly the views, and then we'll speak a little bit more in detail in quotes of the Rambam. There is no question that the Rambam holds that belief in the resurrection of the dead is one of the principles of Moshe. We quoted strongly his language in the introduction in the Mishnah and Chelek in Sanhedrin. Again, in Hilchos Teshuvah in the earlier chapters, which we quoted in chapter 3, what I was quoting now was chapter 8, but in chapter 3 the Rambam says very clearly that one who denies the resurrection of the dead is denied a share in the world to come. So these are unequivocal statements, right? Now, even though he made these succinct statements, in his own lifetime he was accused by many of denying resurrection. The Ravid was very, didn't overstep and say, he says he's very close to denying resurrection. But there were many others who contended that the Rambam is denying resurrection. Now, in order to dispel any such impression, in order to correct certain heretical views that had been caught on, and they became widely accepted, since they were associated with the Rambam, people always brought the Rambams, and so Maimonides composed his famous work on the resurrection of the dead, in which this principle is not only reaffirmed, but is explained in great detail. He contends the following. He states that it's a matter of belief to be accepted on faith, rather than a conclusion which may be reached by philosophical investigation. That's why in the Mor Nevuchim, he didn't speak about this, because there's no philosophical investigation, but basically it has to be faith. Now here Rambam does add one significant point, which we've been speaking. At some point following the physical resurrection, all those revived will die again. And so it appears, quote, to me, I'm quoting him from the Rambam, that the individuals whose souls will return to their bodies will eat, drink, marry, and procreate, and then die after enjoying that very long span of life, which is characteristic of the Messianic era. However, so this that he believes is based upon the Talmudic statement that says that in the world to come, there is a statement that he quoted, there is no eating, drinking, or physical pleasure. So if there is no eating, drinking, or physical pleasure, we could live with that. So why do you need the physical body for it? The Rambam says, if there's no eating, physical pleasure, then why do we need the physical body? So he therefore argues that since everything has to have a purpose, so if God is going to resurrect the body, and if there is no eating or pleasure and so forth, so how does that work together? So he therefore says that subsequently, after the resurrection of the physical body and the normal life that the person will live for a long lifespan, but subsequently they will die, their souls will enter into a certain blissful existence which is unencumbered by corporal bodies because they won't need the bodies anymore. And that will be the ultimate Elam Haba. So now the Rambam is saying both things. So in essence, according to him, there are three different situations. There's the Elam HaNeshamis, which takes place, and everybody knows, right after the body leaves, the soul leaves the body, and there's still this close affinity, like we said, between the soul and the body. Then those that will merit Tchiyas HaMesim will be resurrected, and they will live a long physical life. And after living this long physical life and using their body, because they will eat and sleep and drink and everything, like you said, and marry and have children, but then their souls, they won't need the body anymore. So they will die again. And then their souls will be resurrected. In a sense, the soul won't die, but the continuous life will be Olam Haba, which is a life of the souls itself, without eating and drinking and so forth, and therefore there is no need for the physical body. And this is what he quotes in the 8th chapter of Hilchos Tshuveh, which I read in great detail, and which the Ravid stops about. That's what he calls Olam Haba, not like the Kesef Mishnah contends that the Olam Haba means right after he dies the first time. No. He's speaking about the ultimate Olam Haba that will ensue after the physical resurrection of the dead. This is a view that is also adopted by Albo. Both of them basically contend the same idea, that this is the way it will take place. Now, the Ramban, with great respect, differs, as we'll see. He also wrote a major work where he differs with the Rambam's conclusion. In his Shaar HaGemol, the Ramban takes sharp issue concerning this one point, the destruction of the body. Will there be an ultimate destruction of the body or not? The Ramban claims that after the original resurrection, both the bodies and the souls of those restored to life will live on for all eternity. Now, if that's the case, how would this body be? But he asserts that the resurrection, the body won't be quite the same as the body which we possess in our present existence, but will be a specially refined body which will not experience physical need, but which will be suitable for a holy spiritual existence. Like we find Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, who went up to the heaven 40 days, and Eliyahu Hanavi, and so on. Rambam says, no, that's no proof. They didn't shed the body because they had to use it a little bit later. They had to come back down. But otherwise, he says, what need is there? But the Ramban, it seems to be differing with the Rambam and saying this will be a specially refined body, which will not experience physical need, but which will be suitable for a holy spiritual existence. Now, in the logic of the Ramban, we could perhaps say, because since the body was really a part of the soul, and the body participated in the life of the soul on this world, in essence, if the soul did warrant eternity, it was because he had a partner of the body, that the partner listened to the soul. The partner didn't mislead him, in essence. So it's only Yeshua that the soul should also, that the body should also participate in the Elam HaEmes, in the Elam HaBoa. And the body doesn't necessarily use its own existence for eating and drinking. Rambam's claim is that if they're not going to eat and you're not going to drink, then what do you need your digestive system for? What do you need your hands to reach? So once you achieve that level, and it's only a metaphysical state, so who needs the physical body? Ramban claims no. Therefore you discard the body and you live on eternal bliss. Ramban says no, that you need the body also. The body will be there. But the body, he says, may not be the same form or format that we have in our present existence, but it will be refined, which will not experience any physical need, but which will be suitable for a spiritual existence. So I'm trying to understand, saying in the Ramban, this logic, that the Rambam's whole claim was that since you're not going to use the body, so discard it. Who needs it? The Ramban says that's true. Maybe there won't be five fingers. It'll just be a clawed hand because you don't have to have your fingers. But the idea is the concept of a physical body will also be present. What's the logic if you don't need it? God doesn't make something for nothing. But the truth is, the way we're understanding this, there is this close affinity between the soul and the body. And it wasn't just the soul that merited eternal bliss. The body went along with the soul. The body could have reacted differently, but the soul was able to purify the body in life. So the body itself deserves also a schar, in essence, and therefore the body will be recreated. That's the way I could understand the concept of the Ramban. Now there's a third view, and they go about this same question by Sadia Gaon. And he says that there will be two resurrections. According to the Rambam, there's only one resurrection, but you slip from the physical into the spiritual. That's just like shifting gears. But there was only one resurrection. According to Sadia Gaon, there's two resurrections in order to answer the various questions. And the first one will take place at the time of Mashiach. And that's where people say that Mashiach will come and there will be Tchias HaMeisim. So basically, Sadia Gaon says that there will be the first resurrection at the time of Mashiach. And that will be limited only to the righteous of Israel. Other persons will be restored to life on the occasion of the second resurrection, which will take place at a subsequent time, and that will usher in Elam Haba. The righteous of Israel who will be resurrected in the Messianic era will not die subsequently. They won't die at all. But they will be transferred to the world to come. The resurrected bodies will remain to share the spiritual bliss of the world to come. So that's basically what I was saying in the Ramban, you could say, that Sadia Gaon. So according to him, this is a brief excerpt of his statement, that there will be first the first resurrection, then there will be the second resurrection. And there are other views by Eben Ezra and by Kreskes that have to do basically back and forth with the same ideas. But the major views that we have here are the views of the Rambam and the views of the Ramban. These are the two major writings on this point.